talking about clarity, Jake Shepherd from Synthesis in studio with us. Jake, good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning, Howard, and welcome to all your listeners to the year 2020.
Yeah, quite the year it's already been, hey?
Sure.
With Australian fires, Megxit, Iran, Ukrainian airlines, and this is 10 days in.
Well, sounds like 2019.
Yep, but that's the whole year. At least there was a whole year. We had a whole year to cover this. Now we've, maybe it's sort of one of those, what you missed, you know, sort of the catch up now.
Sure.
And then now we can maybe move
the highlights
forward.
Reel.
All right. So now we're talking about, we've been discussing transformative questions. And what we do is each time we have a session like this is we take a question and we try and explore it.
And we explore it because the questions aren't always obvious. The answers aren't always obvious. And in fact, there's quite a lot of nuance involved. And I think if we actually spend a bit of time addressing that question, I think what we can find is that we start to see ourselves and others in a different light.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can act differently because of that.
Right.
And it's really useful to engage in these transformative questions.
And what are we asking? So what are the questions we've dealt with, first of all?
So the first is when to remain silent and when to speak up.
That was our first question.
That was the first question. Right. The other one was whether to work on our strengths or to focus on our weaknesses.
That is so important.
Yeah, and today I'd like to talk through an equally important question,
mm-hmm.
And it's whether to know for certain or to be in doubt.
Whether it is better to know for certain
or to be in doubt.
So, Nati, what do you think?
You're
deep, eh? For a Friday.
It was very deep.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's good. It's good.
Too deep, though. I can see saying it's good, but I don't even know what that means. Is it better to know for certain or to remain in doubt? 34519 or 061-895-1019. I'd love your input on that. In just a short while, we are going to be exploring this question a little bit more. And for me, it's very interesting because very often we have this need for certainty. And sometimes I think, so my answer to it is, it's so powerful at times to be in doubt. And I'm not talking about, and I think we have to clarify this, we're not talking about, God forbid, a situation where you don't know what's happened to somebody and you need closure, that type of thing. We're not talking about that. We're talking about being in doubt in a situation that could help you grow.
I guess perhaps. Maybe it keeps you on your toes.
Is that what you think? Is that your answer? Is that your final answer? Is that the answer? And that's the
one
you're
keeping
to?
You on your toes. Sounds great.
Exactly.
You certainly get fit.
Well, yeah, we're working on that in the studio as well, I suppose. Cool. Time is 8:33. Joining us in a studio, Jake Shepherd from Synthesis, and we're trying to answer the question, is it better to know for certain or to be in doubt? All right, yeah. Give us the context.
So
give us the background.
We can ask the question a number of different ways as well. We could say, is it better to be in order or be in a state of order or be in a state of chaos? That's another way of asking the question.
Mm-hmm.
We can also say, is it better to live in explored territory or venture into unexplored territory? It's another way of asking that same question, maybe subtly different,
but they're trying to
get to the same thing. We're trying to grapple with the same concept of where do we land up as people? Where should we be spending our time? More in the one or more in the other? I think everyone agrees that we need to do a bit of both. But I think really the answer then to try and unpack it is to understand the advantages of both. What is the advantages of certainty and order? And explore territory, and then contrast it with the advantages of the other, and then you can actually start seeing where we should live our lives within the context of those two.
And anybody, I know certainly as a writer, or I would imagine anybody who's a musician or an artist will always live in this duality, because order and chaos is actually what it means to create art, because you create something from
chaos. I think you're 100% right. I think the artists amongst us are those who venture into chaos and into the unexplored.
Yeah.
They're almost our pathfinders. And in that sense, you're 100% correct. There are those amongst us who are more comfortable in chaos.
Right.
And others who are more comfortable in order. And really the question then is for ourselves, to answer the question for ourselves, where do we sit? What can we use as our guidelines for our own lives?
Right.
And that's what I'm trying to answer today.
Okay.
And I think if we're just focusing, let's say, on certainty and order, we need to understand that there's a biological need for us to be in order. And if you think about it, we have this drive, a need from a freedom from pain and a freedom from anxiety. We need to have a certain level of certainty in order to encourage positive emotion within ourselves. And it's,
well, is it that, or is it simply because it's also too exhausting to make decisions all the time?
Well, the world is so complex. The world is incredibly complex, and if you have to address the world at every level of complexity,
well, I'm just using an example: driving to work. We all drive to work the same way.
On autopilot.
Exactly. Some of us, we don't even remember half of our journeys to work. But if we had to say, right, which route should I go today? And every traffic light, decide am I turning left or right? By the time we get to work, we are fatigued because we can't do it.
And let's say even worse: should I go by helicopter? Should I go by
plane? Exactly. So therefore, we need a certain amount of predictability, orders, and repetitiveness, I suppose.
And that is spot on. And what we do almost automatically, our brains create a mental model of the world. And the reason we're on autopilot is because we're constantly seeing the world, the reality around us, and we're mapping it to our mental model. And as long as nothing unexpected happens, we're fine.
Right.
And that actually allows us to function quite adequately. And when something unexpected happens and jumps out at us, we've got two responses that we're normally faced with. Either we could see this unexpected as a threat. I imagine a screech of tires all of a sudden while you're driving down the road. That's totally unexpected. That's either a threat.
Oh, it's expected with my car, though.
Okay, all right.
and the driving.
Or alternatively, something that unexpected occurs. Maybe it's an opportunity to learn new things. But I think quite a nice way to understand why we wired towards the former, we wired towards viewing it as a threat, is because imagine one of our ancestors stepping out of a cave mouth. You know, they had a good sleep, step out in the morning, and they on their right, they see a lion ready to pounce. Mm-hmm. And on the left, they see a beautiful rainbow. Chances are the ones that survived are the ones that focused on the line and worked out what to do about that one.
That's why all artists die in their 30s.
Because I think just biologically, you've only got one chance to make a mistake. Mm. And once you've had that chance, that's it. Mm. So we're wired to really focus on the negative. And because of that focus on the negative, being in unexplored territory is terrifying. And it's actually quite, it's destabilizing, it's depressing,
so
it's
therefore
worrying,
we seek certainty.
So we seek certainty. And I think it's important to realize that. And in terms of the making the maps of the world, and being comfortable in those maps. So there was a story of my daughter, it was 2 years ago, she had just newly arrived in Israel, and she was traveling on a train, back from wherever she was from after a Shabbat, and she was on the train back to Herzliya. And the train just went past the station. And that wasn't so bad. But then she realized her phone was at 5% full.
Okay, then I would have panicked.
Ooh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I would have also been financed.
So up until then, she had been in explored territory. She knew the train was going to stop in Herzliya. And as soon as this train didn't stop, well, then it was fine because she had a backup plan, which is her phone, so she could find out where she was. And now that was at 5%. And not knowing the next station, she hadn't been there before. It's at night. You don't know if you can find taxis. Mm. So she was really panicking because you use your phone to call a taxi. And it wasn't just her who was panicking. Mom and dad back home were also panicking. But it just shows you how quickly.
Yeah, we can go from order to chaos.
We can go from a calm, you know, collected situation where everything's under control to panic. You can't think straight. You can't think rationally. Now imagine trying to live your life in that state constantly.
Right.
It's way too taxing.
Right.
I mean, as it turned out, fortunately at 2% she got a taxi. Wow. So the phone held out, but it was very, very stressful at the time. Mm. And then imagine how hard it would be to live in the world where you had uncertainty all the time.
Yeah, because it's just too frightening and too taxing, too exhausting, and we wouldn't have time for anything else, I suppose.
Exactly. And I want to just go through just a few examples of where order actually is centrally important to our lives. Mm. So one example, you know, we need a structure on a daily, weekly, and yearly basis. Mm. So like we know that psychologists have said that if, unless you have like a daily wake-up schedule, you can get depressed. Mm. And the way to actually fight that is to introduce a schedule into your day. Or on a yearly basis, you know, we have the holidays where we connect with family. And that becomes like a yearly schedule. So like schedule and order becomes an integral part of who we are, and it's a necessary anchor for who we are. And if you also look in terms of planning for the future, what sort of a job should I get? What career should I have? Mm. Well, you need to know what the future looks like. And in today's world, with the whole advent of the fourth industrial revolution and artificial intelligence, it's pretty scary because we don't know how to plan for
the future. We blame people like you for that.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's pretty scary for people like me who know that they're doing that.
The responsibility.
And if you just, even if you look at like spiritual growth, historically has been through like religious institutions. And today people are asking the question,
repetitive.
Well, I don't know if God exists, therefore, like, how do I grow spiritually? Mm. You know, because the standard path that we've always had is now being undermined.
Right.
And these are all areas, I mean, even culture, your culture expects you to act in a certain way and behave in a certain way. And that's good because you then start, you have like, origin stories, shared origin stories. This is a shared history that we have. Mm. And this is a shared aspirational goal that we have as a nation. And nation building depends on that. So these are all advantages.
Melinda, thanks Melinda. I think she actually gets to the crux of it because she says, how much order is comfort zone?
Yeah. That's also a concern for me.
To me, that's the crux of what this issue is about.
So comfort zone, I think the only time it becomes problematic, because it's necessary, I think that's what I'm trying to acknowledge.
A certain amount
comfort
of order
is necessary.
Is needed.
Where it is used to shy away from chaos and doubt and the unknown.
And growth.
And growth, then it becomes a problem.
Because that's the thing, sometimes if you live too much on the chaotic side, you get trauma. You get traumatized, and then you literally, like, shrink back.
100%, because essentially you are worried about the potential for pain, damage, and therefore pain. And that's what anxiety is. Anxiety is a marker for pain. It's trying to tell you that might be painful. It might be psychologically painful, mentally painful, physically painful. Stay away. It's unknown. We don't know what's there. So all of those things in terms of, you know, living in a state of too much certainty and order is a problem. And so now it's a good time to actually just flip the coin and actually look at the other side.
I'm chatting to Jake Shepherd, 34519 or 061-895-1019. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love you to send us some questions and some thoughts on this rather deep conversation for a Friday. I mean, it's 8:44. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem on 101.9 High FM. Jake Shepherd in studio with me. Jake from Synthesis. We've been talking about transformative questions, and each time Jake comes into studio, we try and look at something a little bit different. This morning, we tried to ask the question or answer the question: is it better to live in uncertainty? Or is it better to know for sure? Effectively, that's really what we are. And effectively, or essentially, this is the difference between order and chaos, isn't it?
And so we looked at, initially, we just looked at the virtues of order.
Right.
And it's important to recognize it and understand
it
why it's there. Because a lot of people talk about how important living with doubt is and ambiguity, and it is important. And I want to address that now. But I just wanted, unless you understand what the role is of an ordered and an uncertainty is.
You can't look at the other side.
You can't look at the other side with any amount of insight, because it looks like then all doubt is good. So let's look at the virtues of doubt, and I think there are many. So even if you look at the scientific method that we have today, and the entire, like the whole the scientific revolution that we're living within in terms of the massive strides that we have made, is actually based totally on doubt. And what I mean by that is if Karl Popper is one of the most famous Darren Basarabi introduced me to Karl Popper and his philosophy, which is great. And he was a philosopher of science, and he actually is known for his philosophy of empirical falsification. In other words, unless something can be proved false, it's not science. And one way to try and understand this is the, you know, when discoverers discovered Australia, what actually happened is up until then, every single swan in the world was white. And the scientific theory was that all swans are white.
Mm-hmm.
And the day they landed in Australia and they saw their first black swan, you couldn't unsee the black swan or unsigned.
So their whole world,
their whole world
of
swan, white swans was thrown out. And therefore, so the whole concept of science is built on the concept of falsification and doubt. Even if you speak to scientists today, any good scientist will tell you, we never know anything for certain. All of what we've discovered up until now is in doubt, and we're always opening up the door for it potentially to be undermined if any evidence undermines what we understand. We need to be prepared to overthrow that which we've understood in the past. So that's just from a scientific point of view. But even if you look at, let's say, I want to have relationships with other people, you know, friendships, etc. And let's say you're really certain in your opinions and you know for sure what you know is right. It's very hard to make friends with all these other idiots out there who don't think exactly like you do.
Story of my life.
But if you just hold your opinions in doubt, what you're doing is you're creating room for others. And you're creating room for engagement with
And isn't that humility at the end of the day?
It's humility
as
well.
It's the acceptance that you actually don't know everything.
And I think I read one of Scott Adams' books, which is, he's the author of Dilbert.
Yes.
He actually said what you should do is make lots of predictions for the future, write them down, tell them to friends, and then acknowledge it when you get it wrong.
Are you mad? Who's a Scott bloke?
Which I think is brilliant advice, certainly in terms of cultivates huge humility.
It certainly does. It certainly does.
And I think then, so the conclusion between the two is to really straddle. It's not to be in chaos or in order, or to know for certain always, or to be doubtful always. It's to straddle the two. And in Chinese philosophy, Taoist or Taoist philosophy, you have the concept of the yin yang symbol, those intertwined fish that circle with the S that goes through it, half black, half white.
Right.
And really if you use that as an illustration, our role is to walk that middle path between the two. So one foot firmly planted in known explored territory, and then the other foot tentatively reaching out into the unexplored and the unknown and the doubtfulness. You actually need to straddle the two. And we know this intrinsically.
Mm.
And the way we know it intrinsically is, imagine you're reading an article. I mean, your wife gets you some really great articles. So imagine you're reading an article and the article is pitched way above where you're at currently.
Mm.
And none of it's accessible. In theory, it could be tremendously informative, but it's above your head. You're not going to get any benefit from it. But imagine it's an article you've read, you know, 100 times, and there's nothing new to gain from it. It's boring. And I think you could say the same thing with a radio interview. Unless 100%. The radio interview is connecting you and extending you, it's not particularly interesting.
And that's exactly. If it's so predictable that everybody knows everything you're going to say, then it's dull.
Exactly.
You're not doing your job.
So we actually almost know, our neural systems tell us, when we're engaged and we find something interesting, that is the middle path. That is the path where we are building on the framework of the known and extending it into the framework of the unknown, learning new information, learning new insights. And then I think the important thing to realize is that it's not really the full answer. So the whole concept of finding that interests you and to walk that middle path, you would say, oh, that's perfect, beautiful. That's our best, most interesting place for us to be in life. But when you actually look at life, it's a lot more complicated because we have responsibilities to the world, responsibilities to our family, to our employer, to work we need to do. And some of that's boring. some of what our culture demands of us.
It's so interesting because so we have this conversation repeatedly with our children. Yeah. I don't want to do that. Like, I want to do something I enjoy, and I can't wait to finish school because then I don't have to sit through subjects that I don't want to sit through. And you know, no matter how many times you explain to them, that just isn't how life is. There are going to be things that are boring,
and that's what,
because that's your order. Yeah, exactly right.
And funny enough, the stuff that you seek out into the chaos at some point comes into the order. It comes into. So, for example, when I was in corporate, that was my order, and that was the thing that I was certain about. And then I branched out into radio, and that was what I had to go get from the chaos. But now, radio is my thing that's ordered. And now I need to try and go find other stuff.
So that's a great analogy. Because essentially what you're doing is you're constantly expanding your area of known territory. So you can almost think of it as a map. You're building this map of known territory, and then out there be dragons. You know, in those old maps on the edges, there be dragons. And those dragons are the chaos. It's the unexplored territory. It's the unknown. It's the fear.
Yeah.
But really what we do through our journey through life is to expand known territory into the unknown and to constantly grow. So that is a great analogy.
Brilliant. Really so, Zanati, what's your next bit of chaos?
Filmmaking.
Really? Well, you were talking about it earlier this week.
I was, yes.
But it's interesting that, because in order to feel fulfilled, many of us, and I can't speak for everybody, because certain people absolutely love order, need a bit of that chaos. We just have to, seek it.
All of us have it, but I'm saying our neural systems tell us where it is. It's that we're doing that engages us and interests us. Is that line between order and chaos for each of us. So you might find an artist needs to stretch out more before they're interested and engaged into the unknown. Mm. And somebody else wouldn't have to stretch out that far to be engaged and interested. So it's what draws you in, what inspires you. And that's the line. But then it's just to try and juxtapose that with what your duties are to culture, to your family and your other responsibilities, and realize that you're trying to get enough interest to give you purpose and meaning in life so that you can deal with the slave to the culture, to the responsibility aspect of our lives. And it's to balance those two. And that's, I think, the underlying answer in terms of where you find that balance between order and chaos and between certainty and doubt. It's to actually live where it's meaningful
and then to
balance what society demands of you with that meaningful life.
For me, as I've been through my journey, I now know where I can find it. And it's in my writing, and it's in talking and being on radio and this type of thing. That feeds my need for chaos. And maybe I need it a little bit more than other people. I get that also. But what about somebody who is working in a corporate, working at a bank, and every day they go into work and they do kind of the similar things to what they have been doing? Where do they seek chaos?
So, I mean,
obviously, I can't speak for every person.
So traditionally,
I'm just trying to understand where they even find something.
I think
like
that's
this.
The role that hobbies used to play to a large extent.
I guess.
You know, people would be working with their hands where the rest
have
of the
an
day
affair,
they would.
Have yes. That's what's funny, isn't it? It's a little dangerous.
Okay, not everybody has to have an affair.
You're not recommending that.
Having an affair.
Fine, okay.
But I do think like hobbies play a role in that. I think if you don't have an extracurricular
outlet.
It might be building drones. I mean, it might be gardening. It might be doing your pool. Okay,
right.
There could be anything, but that's where you need to find that outlet.
Dov says Chuck Norris versus Uri Geller, Daba Fire, Daba. Really, I feel like you're not getting this, Dov. I don't know. I just feel like you aren't getting it. Beulah says there's a difference between being dependable and predictable. It's not really dependable. It's be dependable, not necessarily predictable.
I love that.
I like that. I like that. Beulah. That's great. And, the royals versus human beings, ying versus yang. We get. I don't think it is. I don't know, Jake. Maybe we need a few cheat notes on this, huh?
for sure.
All right. So I'd love your thoughts on it. I find this absolutely fascinating. Give us, leave us with some final thoughts on this.
So I think just find meaning and purpose. And I think that the place that you find meaning and purpose is that which engages you and interests you. And then try and balance that with everything, with all your other responsibilities in life. Try and answer the two questions. What does the world want of me? And what does my soul want of me?
Oh, love that. Absolutely love that. And Zanati, you do too.
Mm-hmm.
You do too. Write that down.
Yeah.
What does the world want of you, Zanati? And what does your soul want of you? Jake Shepherd, absolutely love these conversations. Thank you, as always.
101.9 High FM. One nation, one station.